It's the Tiltcast, episode 596, Dad Gaming.
And this week, guys, we talk Abiotic Factor, Forever Skies, Star Trekker, and Satisfactory. Stay tuned.
Gaming when you can. Oh, wait. Was I supposed to?
Oh, I was supposed to have a can ready.
There we go.
Oh, it's all over me.
It's the Tiltcast, an M-rated show. I'm Nuss.
I'm Jason.
I'm all wet. I'm rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Games and news. Woo! Damn it, Rusty.
I mean, games, what? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we've been playing some video games. And stand up too late. Video game. Been a week. Though.
That it has.
I don't know. Jason, what have you been up to?
A whole lot of work. A whole lot of carting around and dealing with a bunch of teenagers yesterday at my house. And a whole lot of Star Trekker.
All right. That's a good dad game.
Star Trekking.
Yeah, it's a dad game.
Yeah. Other than that, it's been nothing super funny or exciting's really happened this week. So,
well, I mean, that's good.
Yeah,
I suppose
normal's good. Rusty, everything normal with you?
No, nothing's normal with me, man. It's been kind of a weird couple weeks, for me. I've been going through a number of different, I've been on the phone a lot. This is the situation. You know, I'm a big dude. I've been a big dude most of my life, and I've been trying the keto thing and then a bunch of other shit to lose some weight. It doesn't work so much for me, I guess. I decided about 2 weeks ago to start the process for getting medically gutted. I mean
it's kind of what it is
for bariatric surgery. So I have been real busy with that to the point where I've been frustrated, happy, exhausted, working, getting on the fucking phone every few minutes, talking to a bunch of people, scheduling appointments, and just basically playing comfort games, because you just need comfort games at that point.
Something that's not going to challenge you with new things, huh?
Yeah, because I'm done with new things right now. I've got all the things on my plate. But yeah, it's gonna be a thing. I am going to do it. I'm actually, really committed to it. And honestly, keto is great practice for it. I found out. Keto is extremely good practice for this, because after this, after bariatric surgery, you're basically on a keto diet.
Well, you just can't eat breads or sugars.
Yeah, you can't really have processed foods in that way. Can't really have sugars because of dumping syndrome.
Does processed food include bacon?
No. Bacon is like a cured meat, right? So it's not not processed in the same way as, like, you know, going out and getting, like, you know, the pre-cooked breakfast sausages or like the ultra processed, you know, breads or anything like that. But you know,
it would include hot dogs for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I would not be able to, you know, to eat hot dogs. Unfortunately, my time with hot dogs is coming to an end. But yeah, it's like, you know, chicken breasts, you know, or chicken breast, pork chop, or yeah, I can't add the S to those things anymore.
Because it's going to force you to eat less, isn't it?
After the surgery, my stomach will be about the, you know, will have about the volume of somewhere between a half a cup to a cup. That's like total. That's the total amount of, you know, of food that I can have is basically bird sized portions. Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic time, I'm telling you.
Do you end up eating more than 3 times a day then, since you're eating so little at a time?
Well, the thing is you end up having extremely small meals, but it takes longer for things to process. So you really don't want to eat anything more than 3 times a day.
Huh.
From what they were telling me, you know, for the first portion after surgery, my daily intake would probably be somewhere in the 600 calorie range.
Damn.
Yeah, it's really, really restrictive. Like, most of the time you're worried about making sure that you get the right nutrients and you're properly hydrated. And you really don't have space for anything else. So it's going to be kind of a thing. Like, you know, you just get used to that kind of diet, and that is for life kind of thing. So, you know, it's a
yeah. I have a couple of friends that I won't mention on here that did it that had some really good results.
Yeah. Well, the procedure that I'll be going for, the way that they say it is you lose somewhere between 70% and 80% of your excess body weight. So if if I had like 150 excess pounds, it's 70% to 80% of those pounds that I would have, you know, that I would lose with that. And then the rest of it would be like, you know, exercise, making sure I stay on the same, on the proper diet, and you know, not overeating, and or like stretching the stomach out or anything like that, you know, because none of that shit is beneficial for you. But yeah, it's looking to be like quite a big change for me, and that is something that I don't mind sharing, because I mean, I've been a big boy, right? I really like my food, but I also really want to, you know, be able to fucking, like, you know, pick up a band shirt that's not fucking made with you know, made 5X or fucking higher, you know. I want to be able to, you know, just be able to, like, you know, live longer and fucking, you know, enjoy life. And
yeah, we don't want you to die early.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that, and I definitely don't want to go vegan. So this is the better option, right?
Oh God, vegan is so hard and it sucks so bad. Especially if you like me, fake and bacon does not taste like bacon.
Oh, right. And the only way that I'd be able to do it.
It tastes like fried tofu.
Well, it tastes like fried soy beans is what it tastes like.
That's it. And I can't do it. I just can't do it. So
it gives me nightmares.
Yeah. this way, it's basically keto, which, I mean, I've been on and off keto for fucking years, right? We've been talking about keto for a long ass time. And it's basically just the keto diet, only much smaller portions. And you know how, how keto food just basically, keeps you full for a longer period of time because it's mostly protein, right? That's the same idea. It's just, I take a multi, some vitamins with it. I try to get, something that's going to be nutritious and it's going to stick with me for a long period of time. And, it's, very, very small portions. So the timeline for that is probably somewhere in November or December, which is the worst. Because Thanksgiving and Christmas, man.
Wow.
No sugar cookies for Christmas, and I can look at the turkey, but if I have the surgery, I'm going to be on a liquid diet for 3 weeks, so I would be looking at the turkey and drinking the broth.
Oh, man, your mom's going to be mad at you.
Oh, I'm the one that normally cooks the turkey, so...
You're going to be mad at yourself.
So it's going to be a fun time. Now, that's a perfect time for me, though, because I do make bone broth, and turkey, like Turkey Day, Thanksgiving. I go around and collect everybody's freaking, bird bones. And I end up with like 5-6 turkeys worth of bird bones. And I can make a really good turkey broth out of that. And that'll sustain me for those 3 weeks for sure. So it's going to be a flavorful 3 weeks, but man, it's going to be it's going to be rough not having mashed potatoes, gravy, the green bean casseroles, the pumpkin pie, all of the all of the fixings like stuffing and stuff like that, man. And it's going to be probably the worst holiday season for me ever. But by the time by the time the next Thanksgiving rolls around, I will be able to partake in at least a small portion of those meals. And and hopefully I will be somewhere close to half my body size at that time. So that would be that this is long-term goals, man. I have to keep my, keep focused on it. But yeah, it's that is a thing. And as shit come, rolls along, I'll have dates and updates about how, how this all works. But, that's kind of been my last 2 weeks is I've been, dealing with a lot of, a lot of medical shit. So, I have played some games. It's, it's like the, comfort games, the stuff that doesn't piss me off because I can't really handle anything more than that. So I've been playing, playing Final Fantasy 14 a lot, with my buddy, and just doing, just basically leveling all the, all the jobs that I hadn't actually played, since the new expansion came out. So that's been kind of fun. We get to, play a lot now. I have stuff on the, on the plate. So you remember, three weeks ago, something like that, I completed my my upgrade for my computer, right? Well, it's been almost a month now, actually. One of the things that, that I got that I just completely forgot about was when I ordered, when I got the processor, the 7800X3D, it came with an AMD redemption code for some games. I completely forgot about it. And I was looking through my email last night, and I saw that, you know, saw that email from AMD. It says, you know, redeem your free games. And I'm sitting here going, it's going to be some fucking bullshit games, right? Some small ass game that nobody fucking heard about. It's just going to be like, oh yeah, you can have this, that, the other thing. No.
It was. Did you get fucking fished?
No. I was actually floored because I was just about to buy this game.
Which game?
It's Space Marine 2.
Oh, well, shit.
That's a $60 game that just came out. And I got that for free for AMD Rewards. And I also got another game that hasn't come out yet. It's comes out next month, called Unknown 9 Awakening.
I haven't even heard of that.
I have never heard of it either, but from a I watched a trailer for it, and it looks like it looks fairly interesting. From what I understand, the main character is basically in tune with all of the, you know, like, the main character can access and kind of skip into other realities of her, and all of the realities of her is aware of her. So they're all working through this, you know, different realities of the world, and, you know, helping her get to her goal of whatever the fucking, you know, the premise of the game is. But basically, it looks like you're basically dimension hopping into different realities of that same main character. It's kind of an interesting, you know, premise. I'm going to give it a try. I mean, for the cost of free, why not, right? So it's Unknown 9 Awakening. It's completely flown under my radar. And I might be completely off on the whole premise of this. I was just watching a trailer, for Christ's sake. But that is the thing. So I've got Space Marine 2 downloaded. One of my favorite games of all time, Satisfactory, just came out in 1.0. So I rebought that game on Steam because fuck Epic Game Store. And I'm going to... And I, like, you know, I'm going to give Coffee Stain another, you know, like $35 for this game, because it is so fucking good. This, you know, so I'm going to be playing, you know, Satisfactory, and Satisfactory is something that I can throw onto a laptop and play, play wherever I end up. I'm probably going to end up in a hospital for a couple of days at least. So I need to have something to keep my, keep my brain engaged, and that will play very nicely on my laptop. lots of pre-gaming stuff here for everything that's, you know, coming out. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on with me, man. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. Oh man, it's gonna be. I'm excited and just I'm all over the place right now.
I'd be a little nervous too.
Excited,
but yeah. Huh? So I've never actually had any surgery, so I'd be nervous.
I mean, I've been under once when they repaired my leg. And, you know, because I broke my leg, you know, in a fulcrum break, and I had to had a plate and, you know, and some screws put in, you know, to repair my leg, which, I mean, the whole broken leg thing sucked. But, I mean, yeah, it's the worst part about going into surgery is coming out of anesthesia. It's like, you have a lot of, you're understandably like not you're not 100% cool with the whole thing, right? Your brain is, you know, going through all of the different negative outcomes that could happen, right? But they're going to put a fucking mask on you and tell you to count backwards from 10. And I challenge anybody to get to 5. Because I remember getting to 7. So but coming out of anesthesia is the weirdest thing, because it is a dreamless sleep. But just as you come out of it, your brain starts to dream about not dreaming. And then in my case, because they had opened up my leg, right? It was me in a, you know, in just like, you know, complete blackness. And then it's, you know, and then I could feel the post-op on my leg, but it represented as somebody lighting a match and holding it to my pants. And then my pants caught on fire. And as the fire got hotter, I was coming out of it ever so slowly as that was happening. And I woke up with a start thinking that my leg was on fire. And of course, I mean, it was just post-op, but I fully felt like that my leg was on fire. The nurse lady was right there, and she put her palms on my shoulders and whop right to the freaking bed. And she's like, don't move. Like, yes, ma'am. I need one of those ladies in my life.
Well, all right then.
But yeah, she's, you know, she's like, you're okay. you just came out. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like you're fine. Everything went perfect. Like my brain had to reset to reality. But yeah, that's the worst, I'd say, is the worst part of it is coming out of, out of anesthesia. But yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be quite the adventure, and it's coming up here in a couple months. So
yeah, good luck.
Yeah, that's
be a good time for a factory game.
Yeah, I mean that would be, you know, that'd be a perfect time for me to, you know, to work out ratios and freaking like production times and shit. I just need a calculator nearby. But yeah, Satisfactory, man. That's, I can't believe it came out of, you know, it's finally out of 1.0.
Yeah. I feel like it's been like 4 years.
It's been longer, I think. Fuck it. When did Satisfactory come out, man?
Pretty sure it was 2019. I was pretty sure it was Creepy Dinner.
You're right. March 2019.
Holy shit.
5 years.
Yeah. It just seems like it's been... Ah, man, it's been... It just seems like it's been around for a while.
Yeah, I guess it has. Fucking 5 years is pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, I put it down a couple years ago waiting on 1.0. I recently just downloaded it. I got too busy. I've got video games to talk about, but this week work has been exceptionally busy, so I've been kind of focused on that. And yeah, so doing that, and then last night I was out shooting photos, so the majority of today I'll be doing photos. I was taking photos at a very, 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 very dark bar with 3 pink lights. Which pink is like the worst color. Pink and blue. It's like the 2 worst color lights that you can take pictures under, in my opinion. And they're like 2 stops too dark to begin with. Like for any photo nerds out there, like the lowest ISO that I got to was 5,000. But was sitting in the 10,000 to 12,800 range most of the night at wide open 1.8. and I didn't bring a lens that went higher than 1.8 because I knew the light was going to be dark. But, like, imagine your room with the blinds closed, right? Like, if you had, like, darker, like, well, nobody can see this, but darker than it is in the studio right now by twice as dark. And that's how much light I had to work with. So it's like a cave. And it's a cool atmosphere to see a show in. I don't even know how you as a guitar player can really even see what you're playing. You're probably playing mostly by feel because it's so dark. There's like two brighter spots on the stage. It's dark, man. And it's so dark that I have trouble. I end up guessing on my focus and holding focus. So you end up finding a point on the person, focusing, and then there's a button on my all of my lenses where I can hold it, and it'll hold the focus at that point. And so I'll wait for them to jump back in frame at that point, but I still can barely see them. So it's like, it's so hard. So I end up shooting in like super fast mode. I ended up with 2,500 pictures. Most of them are garbage shots because I couldn't see. I just got done with most of a band this morning, and it was taking me about 20 minutes a shot to find the right shot. So like it's been a murder, but I guess I like shooting. I like doing everything in hard mode. I date on hard mode. I date a girl that I've known for a long time that lives a long ways away. Right. I like shooting in the most difficult adverse situations. I like night photography. I like really low light photography when I'm taking portraits. I like shooting bands in dark stages because that's what I can get, right? Like the people that shoot big bands, like that's bright as day. There's no challenge there. Yeah. Cause at, you know, when it's bright as day inside of a venue, because it's a venue of like 2000 plus, fucking easy. Use whatever lens you want because you're not going to be shooting at a higher ISO than like freaking, I don't know, 1600. You're not going to have to. It's almost daytime. You can shoot at like 500 shutter speed. Nope. I'm shooting at 200 shutter speed because I have to catch quick moments at 6400 to 12,800 ISO at wide open because that's all you can do. And using straight primes because you can't use a zoom when it's this dark. And I like playing hard video games, which I've been doing a lot of lately too. I actually got some games that I've finished. You mentioned Space Marine. I did start playing Space Marine. I have zero things against Space Marine. It is old school in all the right ways, and I'll talk about it in a minute. Nice. I just had a moment where I really wanted to listen to music, and that game demands all your attention while you're playing it. So I was like, what crafting games do I got? I downloaded a bunch of games off Game Pass to kind of give myself some variety. I'll transition to the Star Trekker with Jason here in a minute too, because, you know, we've both played that. But I did play some, I'm going to go back to what I have. Space Marine. I think I got about 4 hours into Space Marine. Pretty fucking solid. I played a lot of a game called Forever Skies, which I don't know if anybody here's heard of. Forever Skies is Subnautica in the air. That's mm-hmm. the easiest way to describe it. You're in a blimp. Has a lot more freedom of exploration and freedom of build variety in this game than you do in Subnautica. Subnautica, like you have like certain like. When you get the big submarine, right, like you can modify things to add to the interior, but like there's not a lot of differentiation in your interior shape, right? And then you'll have a base initially that's customizable, but then you just end up being in the big sub, and then you end up moving everything to the big sub. Oxygen's also a thing in this too, which might sound surprising since you're in a blimp, but there's a whole area they call the dust. So you're flying, like, the world's been devastated by war, right? And so everything below the clouds essentially is covered in a layer of, like, toxic chemicals and radiation, I think. Is it radiation? I don't think it's radiation. But, like, think of, like, the whole world's been, like,
chemically nuked, basically, right? And so when you go real low, you run into debris with your ship, and then also it starts to become harder to breathe the lower that you go. So your ship can only go so low, but you can go into structures below the dust. And when you're below the dust, like, your oxygen meter kicks in. It's a pretty simple crafting system in that you have two main materials. You got synthetics and metals. And those are the basic building blocks of everything. And I literally mean everything. So I'll give you an example. Like, you do need water and food to survive, right? Initially, your food source is moths that you boil. You get water from the air and from rain. So you can build a rain collector out of synthetics and metal, right? And that's one way of getting water. You can also build this, like, synthetic evaporator, which is like a one-time use thing that you can put in a little contraption that will suck moisture out of the air. So if it's not raining, you can go ahead and use that and actually get some water, but you need synthetics. There are these little things called, I don't even know what they're called. I don't know, dematerializers or something. I don't know. Deconstructors. Anyways, they're like blue laser beams that you shoot at these floating particles, and that gets you those materials. So from those two basic building blocks, you can build the basics to survive. You can build these lures to get moths that are made out of synthetics and metal, right? And then to cook the moths, you need water, and you don't have to worry about electricity. That's one thing. Electricity is just, like, I don't know, implied. So you don't ever have to worry about any kind of electricity. So the cooker can just cook that as long as you have water in the moth. And eventually you come up across different plants that you can start a garden inside of your blimp. And that garden, you know, needs water to survive, right? And you can use those plants for a lot of different things. There's a big emphasis on viruses in this game. So you get, the further you progress in the story, the lower your immunity gets. So when you start off, you have full immunity and you may not get anything. And if you do get something, you have a chance of, like, basically shrugging it off. So I might get meningitis and then basically sleep it off, right? I might get that from getting stung by a nest of mutated hornets. No spiders in the game, Rusty, so I'll just say that off. Well, wait a second. No, there's no spiders.
No spiders? Good shit.
There's webs, but they're not made by spiders.
Wait, what makes webs but not spiders?
Mutated silkworms, basically.
Oh, okay. I mean, as long as... Wait. Do those mutated silkworms have legs?
A little bit. Kind of look like a centipede, sort of. I don't know.
Okay, so they don't look...
They don't look arachnid at all. The closest you get to an arachnid, and not huge spoiler, there's giant mantises.
I'm okay with mantis. Mantises. But, yeah, yeah. I don't do eight leggers.
But I lay all that groundwork, like, the kind of the way that it starts off is, it's like, you know, here's a basic ass airship. It has, and it is the smallest thing ever. It's so the way it builds out is, it kind of builds in big cubes. So, like, you have your cockpit, and then from your cockpit you have these square cubes, right, that you can add walls to or add different cubes that have different functions. So, like, you'll get, like, a cube that has a ladder in it, right, so you can build a multi-story thing. One that has a stairway, so you can kind of go up and down. Then you can decorate those by adding, like, glass panes and everything. And then everything's limited by weight. And so your weight is determined by your blimp balloon. So you start off with, like, 500 pounds of weight, basically. And then you can expand that balloon on the front or back, or you can add additional balloons. And so you can continue to grow this blimp out to be pretty big. By the end of it, I had two massive balloons on mine, and my carry weight was, like, 5,500 pounds. So, like, pretty exponentially bigger than I – it was a two-decker. I had two decks on my blimp. A whole garden section. I had, you know, a whole section for inventing things and virus – like, I had a virus lab on that I made on my ship. I spent unreal amount of time, like, customizing my ship. It does get easy. So initially you can, like, put your ship on autopilot, so to speak. Well, you can basically put it on cruise control, not really autopilot. So you set your height, right, and then your direction, and then you hold down, you click R, and that, like, sets your speed like autopilot. And while it's on autopilot, you can go outside on these little-ass catwalks and use your deconstructing lasers on the debris, right? And then towards the end, you get some better versions of those that'll actually automatically do it for you. So at the end, I had four of these that I set, like, parameters for what materials I wanted it to get. Very quickly, as I'm flying, like, rake in huge amounts of materials of the basics so that I just had stuff to build, like, even, like, turning them on while I was landed somewhere as debris was flying by, it was just, like, catching shit for me, which was awesome. So, like, at a certain point, like, that collection aspect of it becomes a little bit trivial. You do have some – I have to walk back one thing. Like, you do have some things that require power that you get from batteries, and the batteries you find at outposts. And what it does is you have these little beacons flashing, right? And you fly towards the beacon, and it's an outpost. And in that outpost will be materials. There'll be potentially a log of what's going on. There'll be some data pads that have unlocks for new recipes for you. And then things that you scan, just like in Subnautica, to unlock other pieces of technology. And so the technology is hidden behind the scannables. And then the objects that you can create is just hidden behind the data pads. So the data pads will give you different unlocks for, like, different rooms or different items that you can craft, and then the things you scan are the technology advances. And then you got a whole virus analysis thing for kind of, like, discovering how to counter different viruses. As the story progresses, you get progressively more have lower immunity. I don't know what the inverse of that of immunity is. But anyways, so yeah. You end up having to research that stuff because it becomes permanent, right? Like, there's one that permanently keeps you awake, which means you have no stamina whatsoever. You basically just have to walk everywhere, which is kind of crazy. But, the story is complete in early access, which is weird. And the way they do that is, like, they've got a certain amount of the story crafted, right? And so as you do a run, it randomizes where locations are at. The locations themselves need a little bit more random generation, so it just randomizes kind of like the pathways, but the tile sets are all the same. And so, like, for instance, I went down into this one tunnel, right? And as I take this elevator down, like, it puts me on a different point of access to that same room, right? And so after a certain amount of time, you kind of get used to what things are in the rooms, and then it becomes a little bit easier. And there's about, like, 10 variants for each item that you – or for each location you find. And so there's probably, like, 60 variants. It took me about 35 hours of time to beat in its current state. When it got to the end, it took me the end note of the story. And then it was like, and this is kind of where we're going to go next, essentially, right? And so it took me to a spot kind of like a cliffhanger. And then I said, all right, feel free to, you know, continue to explore whatever. And I was like, I'm going to think about this like a roguelite, right? Because the locations are all going to be randomized next time I jump in. They just finished this big update for what they called the Dust, which was the area that I was in, that I was exploring, that I was kind of furthering some of my research with, which was a lot more dangerous than the above dust area, I guess. But it was enjoyable. Like, I finished 35 hours of gameplay on this week. Like, that's how much I played it. I played it every freaking night. So, they're doing as good a job with it as Subnautica did in early access. I actually think they're doing better than Subnautica did because there wasn't a whole lot of story in Subnautica. It was mostly just crafting stuff, you know, without a lot of story in between besides data logs. And this actually has, like, voice acted story beats in between kind of telling you what's going on. And so when they do the next major release, I might play it again because, like, it's pretty enjoyable. It's very cathartic. It's kind of nerve wracking at points. Like, there's a good amount of tension in the game, but there's also a good amount of downtime in the game too, to just, like I said, I just sat there and recrafted my ship multiple times. You get full refunds for deconstructing stuff. So if you don't like where that window's at, you can deconstruct it and then add a new, you know, a new variant to that there. But yeah, it's a solid game. I completely surprised. It was just, you know, I played the demo of it months ago. It's like, when it comes out, I'm going to play it. And it was early access. It was really early access. I was like, I'm going to hold off. And then it was on a sale for like $18 or something. I wanted a new crafting experience, so I just dove on in and played the hell out of that game. Like I said, like, I have Space Marine. I ended up playing Forever Skies because it's good.
Right.
Played a lot more of another game because it had a pretty big update. And that's, you guys heard of Abiotic Factor? I think I've talked about it on here, right?
I think so.
It's like a love letter to Half-Life.
Yeah, I think I've either got it on my my wish list or I've heard of it.
It's kind of like if Half-Life, 7 Days to Die, and MDK2 had a baby. Okay. So most people listening, unless you've been a gamer and you're in your late 30s or early 40s, don't know what the hell that MDK2 or Murder Death Kill 2 is. It's a game where you created like goofy ass random weapons out of technology, quote unquote, right? Like a toaster gun and things like that. It has a lot of the same zaniness, I would say is the right word to use, as MDK2 does in its technology advances, right? Like I made a crossbow out of pins and, staplers, right? Which is kind of funny. I've got, what else is, like, I've got a shield made out of like taped together cafeteria trays, right?
Oh yeah. That's something that I remember you saying.
Yeah. So
cafeteria tray shield.
Yeah. Got a. And I've advanced my technology at this point. Like, I've got a spear that's got, like, a whole bunch of batteries and a heated knife at the end that's connected with coils for killing aliens and such. That game's really good. There's a little bit of fine-tuning I think they need to do to some of the game flow. But essentially the way that this game works is what is that noise?
I don't know.
It almost sounded like the radio came through. Anyways, so yeah, like the game flow of that game is like, you know, it's another survival game of sorts, right? You got to watch your hunger, your sleep, and your water intake. But then you got aliens to contend with, right? So you've got these aliens that, like, there's been a mass event, very similar to how Half-Life plays out, right? Like, massive event happens, aliens come from another dimension into the underground base, like just like Black Mesa, right? And then you got to kind of survive around that. And so, like, you can eat these aliens, which is weird, right? So as you're killing aliens, you can use their body parts to make food.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of renewable resources, so you basically forced to progress, but there's a lot of resources. So, like, I could imagine if you stayed in the office area for a very long time, you would just run out of shit there, right? That you need. Wouldn't have food. You do have renewable sources of water, but you have to boil the fuck out of it. And it is a pain in the ass. So you end up, like, collecting water from, like, water coolers all over the place and then trucking that back to your base. Fortunately, it doesn't take a lot of water to stay hydrated or to cook soups. So that becomes mostly an issue if you stay in the same place too long. They have really clever ways of moving stuff between bases. It gives you incentives to kind of continue to spread out. Power is a really interesting thing. So at night, the power goes off. So between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m., power goes out and it goes dark. And it goes really dark. Like, you have to use a flashlight. You can make light sources with infinite light that don't require power. So I've got my whole sector. I've got a security sector that I have barricaded off that has like all these torches all around it because it's so fucking dark. And then eventually, pretty early on, honestly, and I just didn't realize this till way later in the game, you can craft batteries and you can use those batteries to kind of connect in between your power sources. So they'll charge during the day. And at night, they'll mostly power your stuff until the last like minute of night, basically, where everything just kind of shuts off battery wise. I haven't found a good way around that, but apparently there's higher quality batteries. But that's a thing. I've got traps all around my base. I have these, like, they call it a choppinator. It's like a, it kind of looks like a helicopter rotor with blades. I've got those all around the entrance to my base. There's these things called portal storms. And so what'll happen is, like, it'll say the air feels different tonight or something to that effect, right? And then you'll have these creatures, like, pop in and attack you while you're in your base at night. Doesn't happen every night. Like, you'll get a message saying that, and it'll happen around wherever you set your spawn point. And sometimes that might be soldiers that are, again, similar to Half-Life, basically the Combine, right? It's be like a radio. You heard a radio crackle, and that means that you're going to get invaded by soldiers, and they're pretty fucking tough. And so there's, like, events to kind of keep you on your toes with your base. But the way that they're crafting this in early access is really interesting. So I haven't gotten to the end of the story. I actually got quite a ways to go. And I've got a fair amount of time in this game. I'd say 15 hours or so. As they develop, they just add a new section to the game. So, like, one big thing they added were portals. So initially there was portals to the alien world that you could go in and every portal goes to the same plane of existence, right? But those resources in that plane replenish every day. So if I need certain things from that, I can do that. But I'm contending with aliens while I'm over there, right? There's these portals. What were the big walking things in Half-Life called? I can't remember.
Oh, the...
The
Striders?
Striders, yeah. They have an equivalent of Striders that are indestructible in one of the planes. But they guard a plane that has some batteries. And so that's like one portal you can go into. It's that, but it's a whole hide and seek game basically in that plane of existence. But that's a renewable source of like a very radioactive battery that you need to power certain things. But yeah, like as you go, you kind of run into new enemies. I just ran into some like basically invisible enemies that are fucking tough as shit. So I've kind of got to rethink some of my strategy here in the new area. I brought a bunch of like trip mine, basically claymores made out of with screws packed in them that I'm using to kind of progress in that area. But yeah, it's a really interesting game, right? It's no zombies. So there's that. It's just all alien. It's the art design itself is very, very inspired by Half-Life, but the gameplay is more like a 7 days to die kind of. And then the leveling system is very much like Oblivion, right? Like I did a lot of carrying heavy things. Now my strength is building up, right? I've been shooting my bow a lot. Now my accuracy has gone up, that kind of stuff. I cook a lot. Well, my cooking skills going up. But I enjoy the goofiness of it all, right? Like there's all these scientists scattered around that like kind of give you some, like insight as to what's going on and give you some hints. There's no map. You have a journal that shows the map of the current area if you found a map, but it doesn't say like have your marker where you're at. You kind of have to look at the map and figure out where your landmarks are to figure out how to navigate around. You get pretty used to it though. It's a pretty interesting game, though. It's very low poly graphics. It very much, in a lot of ways, has worse. It's the same, I think, the same graphical fidelity of Half-Life 1, honestly. And I don't know if this is 100% true, but I've seen some gameplay footage of other people playing it. And when you're in a group, when your guy is talking, their mouth is moving. So if you're on it's voice chat, like when you're talking, your scientist's mouth is moving, which I thought was hilarious. I could be wrong, but that's what it seemed like. But yeah, Abiotic Factor, definitely worth it. Like I'm going to continue to play it because the way that they have it set up is so that it's just like almost like DLC when they create a new area. They're just not complete. They're not completely done with it. But the layout doesn't randomize or anything like that. The only thing I think that's randomized is probably some of the monster placement. But it's a good game, too. But continuing to move on, Jason, you said you had played some Star Trucker. I played a lot of that last week.
I've played quite a bit of it. I fucking love this game. Give it all the things. Make Dennis Hopper happy. Get in your big rig.
Have you? Did I record some footage of that?
Yes, you did. That'll be coming out today.
Did you, have you gotten to one of the asteroid areas?
I have.
Yeah, is that not nerve-wracking as shit?
It is until you realize that navigating debris and any of the asteroid fields is a hell of a lot easier with the external views.
I switch back and forth.
Things coming back at you easier. Picking up and dropping off cargo, except for the actual docking to it part, just the maneuvering for stuff is a whole lot easier in the external view. So kind of driving in first person, of course, you got to perform all your actual functions from first person inside the cockpit. But just overall maneuvering around objects and docks, whole lot easier from the external view. And then once you get to the actual clamping and unclamping portion, you have to do that from inside because you can't hit the controls otherwise.
Yeah, I found the easiest way. So when you don't have any, you're not. Let's back up. Here's what Star Trucker is. It's space trucking.
It is space trucking at its finest. And that's literally all you do. Like, the entire thing is just full of other space trucks. You're not even, or at least to this point, I've not even hit anybody that, like, tried to come after me for my cargo yet or anything like that.
I haven't run anything like that. I've done a lot of the, there's other truckers that basically give you quests too that help with different unlocks. The hardest thing for me is you don't have any lateral thrust, right? So you can't just like strafe your truck, which sometimes, here's where it's incredibly hard. When you have like multiple, when you have several trailers chained together, like it gets to me pretty difficult to try to get those to line up the way that I want them to. Like trying to back up a double trailer is like a fucking pain in the ass. And it has taken me many, many attempts. Like sometimes I end up trying to figure out if there's a way I can pull through because it's just so much. It's not like a regular trailer where, you know, it's not going to move up and down, right? It moves up and down as you move up and down, but in the inverse. And the inverse to the inverse, right? Like if one trailer's down, the other one's up.
Yeah. It can be a little nerve-wracking sometimes when you're in the highway lanes, for example. Of course, you run into trucks that are like not running the speed limit, and then you're trying to avoid hitting those with your truck or your cargo, and sometimes that can get a little tricky. But it's I've not run into that too terribly often. But I mean, you do occasionally have to dodge around somebody just because they're being stupid.
Yeah, I like the simness of that game, right? Like, there's a lot of interaction with your individual controls. I don't know if you took my advice, but I would say go into custom. So set the game to normal, but then go in the custom settings and turn your battery usage down to low.
I set up a whole custom game so that the battery and like oxygen use, etc., were low, just so I could truck more and spend less time doing maintenance.
Yeah, like after a while, you're like, I think I played two separate play sessions of 2 hours of just screwing up. And part of that was just like the not realizing how fast the how much of a priority I need to make the oxygen filters. So like in game one, I got to a point where I just ran out of oxygen and it was game over. And the save point was not that far back. And I didn't realize you could go into the red for things that you need. So you can go up to $2,500 in the red for things you need. So I could have went to a truck stop and bought some air filters and then probably saved it. But then I was too far gone at that point. I didn't want to mess with it. And then I played another game. I was like, man, I am switching out batteries way too often and I'm not making enough money to get new batteries. And batteries become less of an issue once you start doing more salvaging, because a lot of salvage seems to have a battery or two as salvage, which is great because they're not cheap. So yeah, that's why I said turn the battery usage down and prioritize air and batteries over everything else. And then obviously gas. I don't know if you've ran out of gas yet, but it is kind of fun to refill your truck in space if you've got an extra gas can. There's a whole other mini game in that game for trading. So like if you open the map, and I absolutely recommend playing on controller, and I think you hit X, you can see like what trades for more and what trades for less in different areas. So if you see the area you're in has electronics at like a 15% discount, and then a system over electronics are at, you know, a 30% markup, then I'll grab all the electronics that I can shove in my cab and then take those with me. And then it has this whole thing where like certain things are fragile, so you have to put it in boxes with like foam to make sure it doesn't, you know, shift around and break. And so you end up buying or finding boxes that are, you know, for packing fragile stuff, and you end up putting your stuff in there. And I have a whole system of like what all of that is. I recorded a lot of footage of a lot of mundane things, because if like mundane details are your thing, this game has that in spades. I will also say when you're flying the truck, I don't know if there's an example in the video or not, but the easiest way I found to, if you don't have a trailer attached, obviously, but the easiest way to dock to something is to pull up perpendicular to that thing and get to where you can see the docking port out of one of your windows, your right or your left window, right? And then hit your brakes and then just spin it 45 degrees, you know, opposite of that. And you should be lined up with whatever it is and then just be able to back in and dock. And I've gotten pretty good at that. It did take, like, flying a truck, right? Like, that's a weird thing to say. flying your truck is about as elegant as it sounds. And it does take a lot of getting used to. But once you start to get used to it, it actually starts to become kind of second nature. Like, if I've got a single trailer, I can back a single trailer into some things pretty easy. I'm just still having difficulty with the double and triple trailers.
I mean, if I had to, you know, amalgamate it to anything, it is just like driving a big rig just on, you know, 8 axes instead of 2, right?
Yeah, I just wish you could strafe up and down and left and right, like you had some thrusters to do that. You still have to, like, you can tilt right up and down, left and right, but you can't strafe. And I think that extra strafing maneuver, if you had another way of using those thrusters, that would help out a little bit with the parking. Since, you know, you're just kind of forced to like realign by going straight, right?
Well, and I've not obviously gotten far enough in the upgrade path to look. Is there not the option to upgrade for something similar?
Looking through lots of reviews, I have, that's like the biggest point of feedback. We want thrusters for lateral movement. Maybe it's an unlock. I don't know. It's not an early access. It's a, you know, it's a full release. I mean, they might add it at some point, but I don't know. It makes you think of your flight, quote unquote, a little bit differently. But yeah, it does get really like nerve wracking, right? especially before you get your first armor upgrade. And I know that sounds weird too. Armor helps you with little small, not asteroids. What do you like? Is that what they're called?
Like debris that's just floating around.
Yeah.
Because there is, aside from the main highway pass, et cetera, there is just lots of little like metal debris pipes.
Oh yeah.
Plating, stuff like that. That's just floating around. So you can, if you're not paying attention, you can end up with a couple different hole breaches leaking oxygen just because you didn't dodge the little debris pieces.
And until you hit, so before you hit, like one quick tip, before you hit 80,000, none of your hole breaches cost anything to fix, right? You can fix them with yourself. Then you can also go to a repair station and repair that. Once you hit 80,000 miles in your truck, though, you got to pay for it. I've had repairs as expensive as $6,000. And to put that in perspective, that's like, especially early on, that might be three or four jobs early on to make that money. And each job takes you about 10 or 15 minutes. Like later on, like I'm getting jobs that are $3,000 and $4,000. But still, like that'd be 40 minutes of catch up if I had to like repair something. So you want to fly careful. And then as you get more armor, it does take a lot more of a beating before it starts to really screw you up, which I recommend is like one of that and the fuel efficiency upgrade, I think, are the two most important ones. And then there's one that somehow improves the amount of damage your cargo takes if you hit something. And especially while you're learning, like the basics are, if there is a highway in the area, like follow the highway as much as you can, because you don't have to worry about debris on the highway. You have to worry about other trucks, which is sometimes way more devastating. When you exit a warp tunnel or a wormhole or whatever it is that connects point to point, move the fuck out of the way. Because I have more than once like sat there and like analyzed something or went to go do something on my truck and just got rear-ended as somebody else exited. So, like, when you're in the right as you pull out of the wormhole, it is a good idea to just go ahead and pull forward just a little bit. So, get
out of the way of the jump gates.
Yeah.
As quickly as you can.
My God. You don't want to get rear ended.
Like, you definitely want to pull off to the side. Like, don't be that asshole that just stops at the front of the jump gate.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty relaxing though. In all reality, it's a game that you can pause and save anywhere, basically, right? So it's probably pretty nice of that for dead games, right? And it does a pretty decent job of tutorializing things. I just think they need to tune some of the settings a little bit better for normal. Again, I don't. Like, on normal settings, without messing with the battery stuff, like, every couple of jumps, you have a dead battery. Like, it's expensive, and it's like, you're not making enough money early on in the game, really, to do that. I think the only way to get around that would be doing a lot of salvage and searching for a lot of salvage so that you had a constant supply of batteries. But I always keep, like, four extra batteries around no matter what. I always keep a couple of air filters around, and then you've got those fuses that you've got too. Always keep a pack of four of those around too. I do like all the little customization you can do in the outside of your truck too. And you'll get more customization that you unlock as you do the side quest too for the interior of the truck. But not all the customization is cosmetic either. Like, some of it's very functional. But it's
some of it's extremely functional.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I just unlocked solar gates now. So areas where it's super hot because the star's too close. And so you have to fly with cameras. So that's where I'm stuck. Let's say stuck. That's where I stopped for now. Before I jump back in, I have to learn to fly with cameras, which is different because of the depth perception. Like, they do a really good job of simulating what it would be like flying with a camera. It's a simulation game, right? In a very fictional setting, which is weird. but it's really well, it's extremely highly detailed in all the right ways, right? Just even your gauges and your dials and having to click buttons and, you know, you got your cab lights, your external lights, your interior lights, right? just, I don't know. If you got to touch the tizen, this is a game for you. Which,
all right,
I think all three of us do to different degrees.
Sure, even if you don't, and you're just looking for a game that's extremely casual and enjoyable, or two, like us, you enjoyed the exploration or the space trucking part of Elite Dangerous more than you did combat, and you're upset as how much that game is still borked to an extent. This is for you. Like,
yeah, it's
this is fairly low pressure. Like,
I actually think
it's great
in terms of Star Trucking. It's more enjoyable than Elite was, because Elite was like flying in Super Cruise for long distance of time, and the only mini game you had after 20 minutes, right, was when you entered that space area, and then you might have dodged a couple of pirates, and then you docked, and then everything else between was just like lines, you know, star lines as you're flying in Super Cruise, you know, and then like slingshotting around stars. So like there's a whole lot of not doing anything, right? You can't even, until very recently, right? I say for the last couple of years, you weren't even able to get out of your seat. So you were just like, you know, looking at dials and gauges and things like that, but very little interaction while you were flying stuff back and forth. This is all the interaction, a whole lot of like maneuvering around things. So there's a lot of, I have yet to use the cruise control yet in my ship, because I'm always like, I'm always engaged with piloting when you're doing it, right? Like there's it's not like a highway in a 2D plane, right? Like on, like a street that you drive on, right? You don't have to worry about the highway curving up and down, because, you know, when it goes up and down, your wheels track up and down. And this, you have to adjust your attitude to get where you need to go. So like you're actively flying all the time, and it keeps you engaged in a really weirdly, for a nonviolent game, like as all of us tend to play some games with some violence, like this is incredibly enjoyable.
Oh yeah. This puts my last just killing hours, because I can't think of, because nothing else is scratching any kind of itch game, Power Washer Simulator in the fucking teeth.
Yeah, Jason's the guy that likes Power Washer Simulator.
This is just a great just sim game in all the best ways. And the best part is, it's on Game Pass.
Sure is. And even if it's not on Game Pass, I think it's like $22 or something like that.
Yeah.
Rusty, did you play? I know I didn't actually go to you. Did you have anything that you played this week?
Yeah. I mean, I said that I was kind of super busy. But I've only dabbled. I've stuck my toes into Satisfactory. I've stuck my toes into, I wanted to spend more time on Star Trekker, but basically all I got was it installed. Most of my free time has been Final Fantasy. Unfortunately, it's just, that's just the way that, you know, that the way that it worked out. I had maybe an hour and a half each night, and sometimes not even that. So
that's fair.
Yeah, it's just been, you know, I've just been a busy boy. But yeah, I've got like all these really great games just, you know, just kind of like sitting around, you know, waiting for me to, you know, get into them. Star Trekker is definitely on the agenda there. So it's just trying to figure out like when do I have time for this shit? That's the hard part about growing up, man. I don't know when I'm going to be able to have time for all this shit. I don't want to grow up, man. I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
I mean, I do too.
But yeah, Star Trekker's been on the radar for sure. And something, you know, just something about that makes me feel like it just, it would be a good relaxing game. So if I ever can peel myself away from Final Fantasy 14 and, you know, long enough to actually enjoy something else, then yeah, that's definitely going to be one of those, you know, put some chill music on and just, you know, go to town.
Yeah, and one of the parts about it too is a fairly small install. Like, it was less than 30 gigs.
Yeah,
but the game doesn't feel like that.
No, it doesn't at all.
Like, it's got fairly large map, etc. It just, they did it smart. So they're, instead of Super Cruise like Elite Dangerous or anything like that, what they've got is they separate the maps by jump gates, which makes it all feel like one big map, because you're not sitting through this long loading screen, right? Like, the jump gate screen lasts like all of 20 seconds. And it just looks like the inside of like the Stargate wormhole.
Yeah, but you also have to interact with them. Like, you have to get up to, you know, get up close enough to them to be able to go to.
Yeah.
To them. It's at the end of, you know, like one of the highways in that, you know, in one of the zones.
Yep.
And, you know, there might be a queue, you know, like there might be other trucks in front of you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've watched enough of it. Like, I was talking about it at work. It's like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing some Star Trekker. And of course, people are like, "What the fuck? What is that?" So I pulled up some videos and I was watching somebody like doing this. And he's like, "I don't understand why I have to go through the highway. The waypoint's right there." I'm like, "You're gonna regret that. You're gonna regret that."
Oh, yeah. You're going to get perforated with space rocks.
Yep.
You are.
But yeah, it's just been a thing, man. If I could have some time off, man, it would be great. But hey, I don't know, man. We're ready for a break.
Yeah, I think we're ready for a break.
All right, let's take
it. All right, we'll be back.
And we're back.
Woo!
Man, I will say, now that we're in the news section, pretty disappointed with PAX West.
Yeah.
We, only a handful of outlets covered it, which is crazy. I couldn't find any IGN coverage, which is crazy. Kotaku had their favorite games, which did not end up being my favorite games or games I looked forward to. And, really just, what was that? Pizza Champion or whatever that we were looking at that just looked like a
Pizza Bandit.
Pizza Bandit. That looked like a chaotic mess.
It was.
It was too much. Like, they described it as Overcooked meets Gears of War. There's just too much going on. Yeah. Get off my lawn.
Jeez. It was just
that part of my personality came out. Get off my lawn.
Most of what I saw from that trailer was, where's the pizza? What the fuck does pizza have to do with this game? You mean that their headquarters is in the back of a pizza shop?
Well, and then there's a whole
original,
some kind of like thing where you have to deliver pizzas and make pizzas while you're being swarmed by enemies. Jeff has a lot going on.
Shotguns, machine guns, grenades, pizza. Okay. Maybe that's just a little too much. I'm overstimulated now. It's too hectic for me. I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. Give me the inside of the cab of a truck, and I'm golden. Here we are, like getting older in our age. Folks, and we're like, yeah, train simulator 26. 26. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Just get myself into a train.
Whoa. another one that we didn't talk about much, but Age of Mythology retold standard edition also became available on Game Pass last week too.
Yeah, I downloaded it. I just haven't played it yet.
Yeah. Same. If you're looking for a different type of simmy, there you go. I mean, Age of Empires 4 was good. I imagine the rework that they reworked Age of Mythology using some of the new systems and new AI for the enemies that used for Age of Mythology, so should be a really solid remake there. But because PAX news was so few and far between, there was some good news came out of Valve this last week. So they finally launched their long talked about, but very little news of Steam Families.
Oh yeah, I was reading this.
So basically what Steam Families does is it allows you to invite up to 5 family members to join into a family group. And all of those family members get access to whatever games support fit the family share, as well as anything within the age restrictions, because this finally gives you the ability in Steam to set those kinds of guards, like game rating, game content, etc., for any children in your family, as well as playtime limits. So it gives you a lot of features that Xbox and PlayStation have allowed you to manage for years now with any children that you might have in your family group. And despite the fact that they're basically playing the game you own, they earn their own achievements, have their own separate save games, etc. You're just sharing the game,
right? But if
you can even play any of them that strictly support the sharing feature, let's say they have multiplayer, you don't have to own separate copies of the game now for the family multiplayer. It's just that one copy is good, and anybody that's in your family group can multiplay with you without having to buy multiple copies, which is also really cool.
Yeah, that's kind of nice, but I think that there
are some caveats.
Yeah.
Some major caveats. If you're red, so if somebody gets banned in a game, your account's banned.
Yep.
So, like...
Yeah.
And it is region locked as well, which that makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess there was a day and age where that might have been more of a thing between us, but as we've gotten older and a $20 game isn't going to break the bank, I think we've all gotten used to just getting our own games.
Yeah, but there's a couple. I mean, this here is just them trying to find an answer to the
the problem with not having discs.
Yes, the you know, everything going digital. They have to have something to say, hey, we did this. It's okay now. And
it's kind of like having Game Pass for the family though too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is better than not. I will give it that.
It would be nice for right. So you can have up to 6 slots, right? And if anybody vacates that slot, it's not available for a year. Let's say you have a non-traditional family, right? So you have a bunch of roommates. We're going to call that a non-traditional family. And your roommates, because things are fucking expensive, right? And, you guys play a bunch of single player games, and then you all individually buy games together, right? So every payday, all 3 roommates buy a game, right? And then they can share that game as long as they're not each playing it at the same time. So, that might be a use case for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is more cost effective to just be able to do it this way with the where you buy the game once and you can share it with your family and everybody has their own achievements, which is kind of nice, and saves and whatnot. It is more cost effective to do it that way, especially in situations Jason's household, for instance. They would only need to buy one copy of the game, and basically everybody in the house could play it.
Well, and as long as not everybody's playing Call of Duty, that's fine, right?
Yes. It's just, I kind of see it for what it is, and it's just a way to placate the whole going digital for literally everything. So it's, I feel like the game industry is okay, well, we're going to go digital. We're going to save money because we don't have to fucking build a box or make physical discs or any of that shit. We don't have to ship it. We don't have to, have it on a shelf or store it or anything like that. The only thing we have to pay for is the infrastructure to make keys and the processing power to be able to do that kind of thing. So they've saved money there. Plus there's a bunch of, companies who are like, oh, well, we're going to, increase the price of these games up to $70 or more, and then they throw a bone out like this, it's just kind of scummy. It's just the way things are going, unfortunately. And if you want a game, you have to follow these market trends, because it's not going to change just because one person bitches about it. But I don't know, man. It's all right. So, like I said, I'd much rather have it than not, but I don't have much of a use case for it here.
Yeah, there's language that says close family members, but there's not anything specific that says they can't be, roommates.
Hey, close family members. I mean,
I'm adopted.
Yeah.
I adopted a 42-year-old.
Right. There you go. How are they gonna? It would be like, hey, we need birth certificates. Proof of relationship.
We need birth certificates. Jesus.
What? I mean,
that's awfully pedantic and pessimistic language there, Rusty.
Hey, I'm just saying that in a world where I have to, click for fucking cookies on every goddamned website that I go to, and there's privacy statements that that are three screens long in every piece of media that I consume. Who knows? They might want my fucking blood type.
So, some somewhat controversial news that was immediately debunked. Again, why don't always use IGN, because they try to get scoops before they qualify things. IGN had posted a story that one of the developers for Power World, or one of the people on the development team, had talked about potentially going free-to-play with their model.
Uh-huh.
And not a day later, Pacapera made a statement saying it's not changing Power World's business model. It says they were forced to clarify its position after a recently published interview led to some players to believe the game was considering adopting a live service model. So very quickly thereafter, IGN posted the story. Not even 24 hours later, there is a fix to that statement saying, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Well, so, they don't need to. They've already made their money, man.
They've made more than their money. Like, they've got enough to sustain them for a while. They need to finish, their 1.0, and if they want to continue that, like, they could release expansion packs to that game pretty easily, and it would sell.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed.
Like, nothing wrong. I don't have a problem with that business model. You make a really good game, a lot of people play it, right? Especially a survival crafting game. You're like, oh, I'm going to add this whole new area with all these new mechanics. Let's sell that for $15. Yeah, just if you really like something, you want to get back into it, and they added more content, like, that's a business model I can get behind.
That's Ark, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they release another
same thing.
Right, but, if they tune it better, right? Like, if that was better for non-communities to play, because that's how it's tuned, is for a community to play. Like, that would be great if you could single-player that easily. And just buy another map, and here's another 40-plus hours of content,
Right.
Tame times, and a whole lot of things need to be fixed for single-player. Like, Ark really does need a tuned for single-player experience.
That's true.
Let's say Jedi Survivor finally kicked DeNuvo.
Nice.
2 years too late.
They won.
Me and Jason had to find a mod last year to play that game. Almost a year after it. We played it basically 6 months after release. We finally were able to figure out a way around it with a mod.
Yep.
To fix a lot of weird CPU issues. That was annoying as hell. It is a vastly superior game to many Star Wars games. I know the reviews were all over the place for the newest Star Wars game, so I'm kind of just like, yeah, I'm going to wait for a sale before I pick it up.
Oh, Outlaws?
Yeah, Outlaws.
Yeah, same.
So, you probably won't get a lot of that from us unless that's not $70. I think it's $70 to begin with, right?
It was... there was a possibility of me actually playing that game if I had gotten the key for free. But I did not get the key for free. We ended up getting a key for that game at work due to a purchase that we had made on Amazon. But we ended up giving that key to somebody else because
nobody was that interested. Nobody was that interested.
Oh, well, I said that I'd take the key, install the game, and never play it, which is probably what disqualified me from getting the key. it'd have to be on a deep, deep sale for me now at this point. It didn't look like it was even fun. But Ubisoft being Ubisoft, they just Ubisoft the fuck out of that game. So, yeah. Well, there's other games that I'd like to play. I still haven't played Jedi Survivor, even though I enjoyed the first game. I just haven't, I hadn't got around to it. You know, maybe now that DeNovo's not on there, and you know, maybe the performance has improved because that's been removed. You know, if it's on a sale, well, like winter sale, maybe. So yeah, there's a. Let's see. So I think last time we were talking, about some, you know, some, you know, games that happened to be in the news, and there was one game called Concord.
Oh yeah, yeah, Concord.
We were talking about, it's like, yeah, it's just like another Overwatch, and I'm not sure if that would even take off. Well, it didn't. It didn't. It hardcore did not take off at all. There was only like a handful of people who were playing that game regularly at, you know, immediately after launch. So much so that, you know, that. And it just got pulled down. Like, Concord is, as of right now, no more. The game was canceled after release. It's not something you see very often. Like, a game that, you know, that releases and then, like, 2 weeks later is, you know, no longer available, unplayable, and everybody that purchased it got refunds.
Yeah, it's crazy that just crashed and burned that hard.
It was. I mean, it was bad enough that there wasn't enough people playing it that it got anthemed. Being anthemed is now a verb.
It didn't even get anthemed. It got worse than anthemed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, the anthem is technically still playable.
Yeah, you can still log in and play that game.
Yeah,
yeah. Concord got completely shut down. And you know, people are getting refunds for it.
So there was a period of time, like they made the announcement that the sales of Concord weren't up to, you know, their standards, and rather than try to fix the game or do anything with the game, they decided to just pull the plug. Well, there was about a week since that, you know, from that time frame to the time that they were going to pull the plug. They were going to pull it at the end of the week, and there was a very dedicated group of players that were speed running through that fucking game for the achievements. Because on PlayStation, to platinum that game, you had to get to like rank 50 or whatever like that, you know, and, you know, play a specific amount of games. And that was going to be one of, if not the rarest platinum available on the PlayStation Network. So people were, you know, going for it hard, and I mean, unless you were playing from literally day one, the very first minute that it came on, it was going to be really difficult. And I think only a handful of people actually got the platinum. So, you know, to those handful of people, I mean, congratulations, but you have probably, you know, probably one of the rarest platinums that nobody could ever get again. Now, the future of Concord's kind of still up in the air. Like, they pulled the plug. The development team is, I mean, obviously, you know, they put a lot of work into it. But there's no word as to what's going to happen with it. Like, if it's going to be changed in some way, or if it's going to be reworked, there's a lot of development time that was already put into that game, right? So, you know, so who knows? You know, it might make a reappearance as something different. in the future, but as of right now, the Overwatch style, gameplay is long dead. So other things that came out of the PlayStation, the PlayStation camp over the last week or so was the announcement of the PlayStation 5 Pro.
Oh yeah.
Oh boy. So the PlayStation 5 Pro is a an upgraded version of the PlayStation 5. PlayStation has had kind of an unofficial PlayStation 5 Slim that had a like a modular side to it, so that you could add the disk drive to it if you wanted to at an additional cost. But the PlayStation 5 Pro is going to retail at $700.
It's so crazy.
And we'll have upgraded memory, it'll have upgraded storage and an upgraded graphics processor. And the way that they're the way that they're marketing it is most people chose, like, if you're playing on PlayStation, there were some games that will give you the option for fidelity versus performance, so you could get better frame rates or have a lower frame rate with better picture quality. And most people chose more frame rate, for obvious reasons. So what they're advertising is that you kind of get the fidelity mode with the frame rates of the performance mode on, some games. And they're doing that by using, a PlayStation specific kind of super sampling so that you can, so that it can maintain those frame rates at a on some games, and it's going to be based off of the game developer, and in most cases it'll be based to in the game developer's hands to be able to make those tweaks. But there are some games that it's going to apply to just as a rule. And one of those games is Bloodborne. Now, if you are a FromSoft, fanboy, a lot of, the camp of Bloodborne fans have been screaming for a Bloodborne remake, or at least a remaster, on the new PlayStation, consoles, or to port it to PC, so that you could play that game at something more than 30 frames per second. So with the PlayStation 5 Pro, it will take Bloodborne and through the use of that super sampling will upgrade it to 60 frames per second experience.
When are they going to port that to PC?
So it's not going to do anything for, like, the resolution of the textures or anything like that, but it's going to, basically upgrade it to a 60 frames, experience, which may just sell the PlayStation 5 Pro, because, FromSoft has basically said, hasn't said anything about remastering that game, and a lot of people have just been, pining to play that game, especially with Elden Ring being, so popular. So
the thing is, it's also supposedly going to have some new ray tracing tech from AMD that they've not included on any of their chips yet. So it's supposed to be the first chip with new ray tracing tech.
Yeah, and they're going to turn on ray tracing for, or have ray tracing available to, for the PlayStation 5. That
said, I don't know if I would purchase it just off of that expectation alone, because if experience with the 7000 series graphics cards has taught us anything, it's that, well, AMD is still lagging behind NVIDIA, and to an extent, even Intel right now, as far as ray tracing capability goes.
Yeah, it's just a way to be able to provide some of the dynamic reflections, you know, and lighting and stuff like that that wasn't necessarily available before, or was available before but was slowing things down. And that is a big thing with the PlayStation 5 or PlayStation 5 Pro, is just putting more power into it so that it has the ability to, you know, to keep those frame rates up high enough to, to at least hit the 60 frames mark, because a lot of gamers are put off by the 30 frames per second on consoles. You got to hit 60 at least, you know. So, you know, there's a handful of games that's going to be available, you know, right away, that's going to take advantage of the tech, and, you know, more will come down the pipe, but a couple of them will be like Dragon's Dogma 2, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, Alan Wake 2, Hogwarts Legacy, Horizon Forbidden West, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, for the First Ascendant, Last of Us 2 Remastered, so on and so forth. So, I don't know, man. There's no possible fucking way that I'm going to spend $700 on it. Especially if you want the disk drive, it's another $110 on top of that.
That's so much money for a console.
And that's the...
At that point, you know, unless you're just super PlayStation fanboy that only ever plays games on PlayStation, you might as well build a PC at that point.
I mean, that is,
you could build a system with a 30 series graphics card for around that price.
That is a lot of what people are actually saying online too, is, you know, that is really close to a gaming PC in the price range. And if consoles are going in that direction as far as the pricing is concerned, most people are going to look at gaming PCs, just because, you know, if you're gonna buy a gaming PC, you also get the benefit of it being a fucking PC that you could actually do other shit on, you know. So
yeah,
I mean, whereas editing photos right after the show on my gaming PC,
exactly, you know. And you know, if you get a console, you basically have an entertainment box, and for the most part, I mean, you can do things like Netflix and shit like that on those. But, you know, like for instance, on the 70-inch TV down here, in our man cave, we have the PlayStation 5, an Xbox, and an Apple TV. And when we go to watch fucking movies or anything, we're using the Apple TV. We're not using the PlayStation.
Right.
So, you know, it's, you know, there's other things that fill that need. So I don't need the PlayStation. And if there was, if the exclusives on PlayStation came out day one on PC, I wouldn't buy a PlayStation. The hardware doesn't do me any good at that point. So, you know, it's, I think we're at a turning point in the consoles, that we're probably really close on the, we're close to transitioning everybody over to being PC, and everybody, you know, these game developers just making shit for PC, because, yeah. I mean, if PlayStation became a Steam-like store, I would probably buy, you know, PlayStation exclusives from the PlayStation store if it was like Steam. If they continued to, you know, if they put it out on day one on, you know, on PC, and had, you know, decent titles, you know. But
there hasn't been enough exclusives this generation for me to want to get
a console, you know?
I mean,
I have a PS5. Yeah. If I turned it on, I haven't turned it on in a while, though. Like, God of War, I think, was the last thing I played on it, and that was end of last year.
Right, and that's the thing. I just turned on my PlayStation 5, and there was a couple games, but, you know, a couple games I loaded onto it to, you know, to play around with it, but it was like, you know, some of those games were ported to PC already, like Ghost of Tsushima, that was, you know, that was ported to PC recently. You know, most of the games that I'm playing on PlayStation 5 are fucking like the PlayStation classics, like the games that are no longer, you know, not on, you know, PC. You know, those are, you know, that's the only reason to have a PlayStation at this point. So,
It depends on your price point, right? Like where you're at, and like the real value of consoles, right, was like $400 to get video games. Versus PCs, right? It's really hard to make a PC at a comparable price point that will do the same thing as an Xbox or PlayStation 5 at $400. That's a very fair argument, right? But you can get, if you have the money, you can build something far superior to that, right? And get most of the same games and have multi-use out of it. But once a console starts getting up in the $700 range, now you're just... You can get a graphics card that'll run ray tracing for that price, and then the final components aren't like for a little bit more, you can have a vastly superior gaming PC.
That's, you know, that's way more versatile.
Right. The versatility, like just in like what I'm doing, right? Like I'll be surfing the web on one screen or watching YouTube or running. I actually run my stereo through my PC too for, you know, for digital music. And so I'll run music off of it, right? And split the audio feed so that I have one thing going to my audio receiver and the other thing coming out of my, you know, PC speakers. And then just game or podcast or whatever, I don't have to have a separate device for that now. It's all in one. And I realize, like, phones can do a lot. There's a lot of things that you can't do on a phone very effectively, like, very maybe specific use case, right? But photo editing, like, I couldn't imagine doing my bills in Excel on my phone. Like, that would be crazy. Any kind of meticulous data entry of any sort, right?
Right.
Any kind of, like, photo editing of any serious degree, right? Like, you can do some basic photo edits with a lot of the built-in software. I've done Lightroom on my phone. It's not the fucking same. You got to use Lightroom Cloud, and it takes forever to load. It's fucking slow. Hell no.
Yeah.
And you have very limited space on your phone, right? You can't expand storage. Expandable storage isn't a thing like it used to be on your phone.
That is true.
A phone is still, it's a half-ass, like all the other things that you can use your phone for that it's not a phone, it's kind of a half-ass version for, except for maps, right? Like we don't have to print maps like we used to in the old days or read a map like we used to in the old days. But, or, you know, my, you know, Bluetoothing.
Map out your travel and then print it out.
Yeah, MapQuest.
Yeah. MapQuest.
Like, you know, your music's kind of half-assed, right? Like, Bluetooth, MP3 audio is okay, right? No matter how good your camera is, it's half-assed. A basic digital camera will do better because of glass than your tiny pinhole camera on your fucking phone. I don't care how many megapixels your iPhone is. It has very, very, very small lenses and a very small surface area I don't care, like, how bright your flashlight is on your phone. Like, your flashlight, a flashlight's going to be more, you know, like, it's a Swiss Army knife, but it's really a master of phone calls and social media, right? Like, that's what it masters is phone calls, social media, and text messaging. And then everything else is the Swiss Army knife approach. And when it really comes down to it, it doesn't take the place of a home computer for a big chunk of people. I might be completely off base, but yeah.
You would think that, but there's an actual, I read someplace that there is that the latest generation, Gen Alphas and like some of the younger Gen Zs, were actually writing school papers on their phones because they're more used to the keyboard on a mobile device than they are with a keyboard like a standard keyboard for a PC.
Now that's
they can
nuts.
Type faster that way. It's mind blowing what's going on.
Yeah, I'm pretty slow on text messages, to be honest with you. When people want to have full conversations via text, I'm just like, at least I can pull up messages on my browser so I can type lengthy responses.
Yeah, I could not fathom like writing an like a full ass like, you know, like what? A report or something like that, you know, or I have to turn it in, you know, to class on my phone. It would drive me crazy, man. It's well, not
also
meant for
the screen
for
size
processing.
Right? The screen size on your phone, right?
Exactly.
That would just kill me.
That's what they want. That's what they're more comfortable with, so.
Yeah. You know. That is what happens.
But yeah, it's that's yeah, it's crazy. There's no way I'd be able to pick one of these things up though. Not a damn thing. Let's see. What else was there that came out in the last couple weeks? There was a bunch of stuff about the voice actors union. But they'd signed deals with 80 individual games about it was basically just a bunch of indie titles that they decided to sign contracts with while their strike continues. So basically, I mean, we're going to get more voice acted indie titles than we're going to get AAAs anymore. But yeah, that's going to be interesting going forward. I want to see what that is. We've been having conversations about AI at work quite often, and I mean we use it, but it's gotten out of hand. Like there was a picture that I was looking at, and it looked like a photograph done on a Polaroid of a building from like the 80s or late 70s, early 80s. And it was like steeped in nostalgia, right? Like it was one of those pictures, like you could have swore you've seen that place before. And it was revealed that it was built by, or it was created by AI. And it was looking for specifically like nostalgia inducing things, and the AI intentionally made it look run down, like it was older and, you know, abandoned. And the fact that it could fool me, it's getting better, and it's not in a good way. Like, it's scary.
Yeah, if you want to look up Will Smith eating spaghetti redo.
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah. Did you share that?
I did. Yeah, it did. It's still a little bit messed up, right? Like it's still screwed up enough that it's definitely tell like the mouth
video still was nightmare fuel.
Because they're reverse eating spaghetti, and what that means is as they're spooning it in, like spaghetti's pouring out of their mouth, which is weird enough. But the chewing's still not right. The mouth sync is still off. The skin still looks pretty plastic. The facial expressions are a little bit off, right? The voices are kind of flat. Like, it's still, I don't know. It's still got a ways, but it's closer than it used to be.
It's a lot closer than it used to be.
Because Will Smith eating spaghetti was like, what, maybe a year and a half ago? Or 2 years ago?
Yeah. It was a couple years ago, I think. But
no, it was about a year and a half ago. Because you have to remember the big image generators, Midjourney and DALL-E, just released their big ones, like 2 years ago. So it's all that stuff's been moving really fast.
Like, there's definite use cases for it. Like, I like DLSS, right? Inferring pixels from the pixel before, right? To help with processing on games. I think that's a cool adaptation of the technology. And NVIDIA's the one leading the AI revolution, right? But yeah, there's a lot of... We could spend a whole podcast talking about how we don't want AI to replace art. We want to help it, use it to make mundane tasks easier, right? To give us more time to do the things we want to do outside of work. But it's just an interesting age we live in. I don't think this is anything that we ever thought that we'd be a part of this early in our lives.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I see the picture you sent. That's shockingly close to an old Polaroid.
Yeah, that's the image that I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, that's disturbing how accurate that is. I'm trying to find problems with it.
That's the thing. I was having trouble trying to find problems with it, too. I just shared it in our...
I don't know what that... device is in the middle of the room that looks like a pizza oven but is broken in weird symmetry.
It does. I think that the wording on the exit sign up there, if you scroll in real quick, real close,
doesn't say it. Messed up too. Doesn't say anything.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's close enough that it at first, second, and third glance, it's like that looks eerily familiar, like I've been there before.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's getting better and better over time. And while it's I just saw a couple of them on this page. I'll show you this page, or I'll share this page with you. But it's so fucked. It's Internet by Night on Tumblr. It's all AI generated shit, and it is just it breaks my brain sometimes. I'm looking at a GIF of old people on toilets, and they're like missing arms, and they've become part of the toilet, and it's breaking my brain right now. So AI, dude, it's it's scary.
It's everywhere.
Well, it's only gonna get more useful. I don't know if it's if I can call it better, but it'll become more useful over time. So
that is true.
Anywho, that's all I've got. This whole fucking thing, man, is breaking my brain.
Yeah, I don't have much else. Jason, do you have anything else?
Nope. So with that, guys, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is now tiltcast.com shorts with a Z. And then you've got, find us on Spotify and iTunes. Like us, review us.
And subscribe. Find some friends of the show. We've got For the Love of Gaming. We've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast, and we've got TVGP.tv. They do fantastic things and also stream. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.